Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 13, text 22. Purushaḥ prakṛtistho hi. Bhunkte prakṛti jān gunān. Karanangunasangosya Sadasadyo Nijanmasu Purushaḥ prakṛtistho hi Bhunkte prakṛti jān gunān Karanangunasangosya Sadasadyo Nijanmasu Purushaḥ, the living entity, Prakriti, Staha, being situated in the material energy. He, certainly, Bhunkte, enjoys, Prakriti, Jan, produced by the material nature, Gunan, the modes of nature, Karanam, the cause, Guna, Sangaha, the association with the modes of nature, Asya. What does that mean? Does anyone know? It's a common word. Comes up. Janmadhyasya. It means this. In the Janmadhyasya verse, it refers to this universe, or this everything in existence. Here it refers to, as Srila Prabhupada states, gives the word-for-word translation, of the living entity. So, asya, of the living entity. Specifically relates to the Purushaḥ. Sat. Asat. In good and bad. Yoni, species of life, Janmasu, in births. The living entity in material nature. Thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. Purport. This verse is very important for an understanding of how the living entities transmigrate from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes dress. This change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. Under the influence of material nature, the living entity is born sometimes as a demigod, sometimes as a man, sometimes as a beast, as a bird, as a worm, as an aquatic, as a saintly man, as a bug. This is going on. And in all cases, the living entity thinks himself to be the master of his circumstances, yet he is under the influence of material nature. How he is put into such different bodies is explained here. It is due to association with the different modes of nature. One has to rise, therefore, above the three material modes and become situated in the transcendental position. This is called Krishna consciousness. Unless one is situated in Krishna consciousness, his material consciousness will oblige him to transfer from one body to another because he has material desires since time immemorial. But he has to change that conception. That change can be effected only by hearing from authoritative sources. The best example is here. Arjuna is hearing the science of God from Krishna. The living entity, if he submits to this hearing process, will lose his long-cherished desire to dominate material nature, and gradually and proportionately, as he reduces his long desire to dominate, he comes to enjoy spiritual happiness. In a Vedic mantra, it is said that as he becomes learned in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he proportionately relishes his eternal blissful life. Srila Prabhupada begins this purport by saying this verse is very important for an understanding of the living entity's of how the living entities transmigrate from one body to another. And in fact, there's so much packed into this verse that without some prior knowledge or without it being explained, you can't catch it all. There's a lot of information there just in one small verse. The words Purusha and Prakriti are central terms in Sankhya philosophy, but they're not being used here in that sense as in Sankhya philosophy. These terms, Purusha and Prakriti, come again and again in this chapter, which is the chapter which is discussing Kshetra and Kshetragya. And Kshetra means the field of activity. Kshetragya means the knower of the field of activity. So Kshetra, the material nature, that is Prakriti, and the knower of the field of material nature, or the enjoyer, is the Purusha. Purusha and Prakriti, these terms can be used in other ways also, for instance, or especially to designate the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the Purusha, and the Prakriti as his energies. The sense is given here of the Purusha, the enjoyer. The Purusha enjoys Prakriti. The example is given. Srila Prabhupada gave the example. Purusha means male, Prakriti means female. So the man enjoys the woman, particularly in the sexual act and otherwise also. That's the accepted understanding. So the Purusha is situated. Now another understanding is Purusha means who is transcendental. You'll find all of this is discussed in this chapter. The Purusha is actually transcendental. The soul is transcendental to material nature, but Purusha Prakritista, he's situated within it, although he doesn't really belong in it. And he's trying to enjoy it. Actually, this verse says he does enjoy it. But what is that he's enjoying? He's actually he can't actually enjoy. Spirit can't actually enjoy matter. There's nothing actually enjoyable in the chemicals and energies that constitute material nature. How enjoyable is hydrogen or oxygen? It's just, if you take the chemicals, there's nothing there. But when it's combined in innumerable combinations and permutations, the living entity in contaminated consciousness, which is not stated here, he takes it to be something for him to enjoy. And there are three modes of material nature, which are discussed in some detail here in Bhagavad Gita, particularly the next chapter. We'll discuss, the 14th chapter, we'll discuss the three modes of material nature. So according to the modes of material nature, a person is presently situated. It's like a roller coaster, up and down. Uchatara, that Bengali word is derived from Sanskrit, is up, undulating, uneven, up and down, up and down, up and down. So according to the modes of material nature, one is presently situated in, and it's very complex, because the modes of nature that one is presently situated in, there is, analogously to rasa vichara, psychology, an aspect of Vedic psychology, there is one's sthayi bhav, or one's general situation, and vyabhichari bhav, that means that one may, which are time to time manifested. For instance, one might be a very peaceful and calm person, but under certain circumstances, he may become peaceful, calm, wise, introverted, but under certain circumstances he may become apparently frivolous. Some example of that is of the given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Rai, who are very, both of whom were very respected. They acted as very grave, respected, and very learned persons. But they, at one point, they engaged in water sports like children in the Narendra Sarovara, one lake in Puri, and they were splashing each other with water and fighting like that. So that was quite surprising for everyone to see how they had lost their typical gravity. And later they reverted to their typical gravity. Also, one may change. Sometimes we see children, they grow up very quiet, and when they get older, they become very outgoing. Or it may be during some period in one's life, one's whole nature seems to change. That could be mapped by changing astrological influences in one's life, or it could be due to some accident. One gets hit on the head accidentally, and one's personality seems to change. I know one devotee who was like that, who was a very nice, friendly devotee. And then he got in a bus accident, and after that, he often used to speak very critically and harshly of devotees, but no one took him seriously because they knew that he had changed. He had changed due to that bus accident. Of course, it must be something in his consciousness that came out. Or one can change due to a religious conversion. Someone may, from being a very quiet person, he can be become a very aggressive preacher to save all the people from going to hell or some such thing. Or he can become changed from being very religious to being atheistic due to... So it's by association with the modes of nature, and by association with persons in different modes of nature, one's whole outlook can change. If one becomes a drug addict, then one's person... one's mode of life can change. One can drug addiction means one sinks into the depths of tamoguna, or alcohol addict, or tobacco addict. Not so extreme tamoguna, but definitely is tamasic, smoking cigarettes or whatever. So in this way, one can change in this very life. One's personality can seem to change, or due to some experience, someone may have a very traumatic experience in some love affair, and then become a woman hater and think that all women are bad and evil. So it's all due to mixing with Prakriti in various ways, and the modes of nature in various ways, and identifying oneself as being part of that Prakriti. And constructing, with the help of every other living being around us, especially other humans, a particular persona. That means persona. It literally means, or the etymological derivation is, a mask which covers the face in a drama. So that the real person and his real emotions can't be seen. The audience sees something else. But when we think, I am the mask, and we forget who we actually are, well, that's another kind of insanity. If someone is acting a role in a drama, and someone who's acting in a role in a drama is advised that you have to identify with the role, even if you're not like that. Just like our Damodar Gauranga, who used to be an actor, TV actor, Dhanush, is his comment. You all know the name. Now he's a director. That's promotion, it seems to be. But he used to play bad roles, the wife beater, the criminal, and so on. So that when people would see him going in the local train, they would joke with him, oh, I hope you're not beating your wife, or you're not going to beat me, or some such thing. But he himself is not like that. We hope. We know he's not like that. He's a peaceful, pure-hearted devotee. Or even before he took to devotional service, it was a role he was playing. But if someone overly identifies with that role, say he's playing the role of a criminal, and then he, in a drama, and then he comes out of the theater or the TV studio and continues, then that's not good, is it? Now, it may be said that there are some Vaishnavas who say, well, you play the role of a gopi. You dress as a gopi. Man can dress as a gopi and take the role of a gopi. And in that way, one can, by pishashkritanaya, just like some insect is caught by another insect and in prison, and by meditation they take a body of that insect. So it's thought that by playing the role, a man will dress as a woman, he'll put on the sindhur, the red mark of the married woman, and walk and talk coquettishly, and 4 days in a month, not be seen, be hidden away. No one does that nowadays, but until recently it was done among higher class women. They would, 4 months or whatever, in a month they were not to be seen, unless they were pregnant. So by this, the idea was that by taking the role of a woman and considering oneself to be a gopi in Krishna Lila, one can attain to that. And that process is actually there. That's an accepted process, but not to physically imitate, but to mentally meditate upon one's siddha deha, one's perfect form in the spiritual world. However, there's qualification for that. Adhikana labhya siddha deho bhave viparja buddhi janme shakti rabhave. Bhaktivinoda Thakur warns that if we try to meditate upon our perfect spiritual form without acquiring the qualification to do so, then we won't attain to that kind of consciousness, but we'll actually attain to an opposite kind of consciousness. We won't go up, we'll go down. Due to lack of ability, lack of qualification. So we're all as if actors on a stage, as the poet, dramatist William Shakespeare noted, life is but a stage, and I don't remember the rest of it. So he had some good insights, which is one reason why he's considered a great writer. He had many insights into the human condition. But no factual knowledge of the human condition. This one verse of Bhagavad Gita gives more knowledge of the phenomenon of reincarnation than so many books may be written about it, so many speculations about it. Especially the Buddhists have to speculate about it because they accept that there is reincarnation, but they don't accept that there's any soul, which leaves them with a lot of speculation because what, who, why, and how they get reincarnated, it's very difficult to explain unless you accept that there's a soul. So they got themselves existential mess, worse than philosophical mess, worse than the existential mess that they're trying to get out of. They understand it's a mess, but they made a worse mess by speculating. Well, of course, Lord Buddha himself is credited or said to have first advanced the anatma theory. There is no soul. So, everyone, because we don't know who... See, it's not all exactly explained here, but it's all packed into this verse. Elsewhere in Gita, there's more explanation. And in Srimad Bhagavatam especially, there's a further explanation of these phenomena. That we identify with the particular role. We identify, not only do I identify, but we're forced to identify. Just like a dog is born, and immediately he starts acting like a dog. He didn't think, well, in the last life I wasn't a dog, so why should I be a dog now? But he thinks doggishly, right from the very beginning. I remember once at ISKCON Baroda, there was a pregnant dog who used to hang around on the premises, and one morning I saw she's not pregnant anymore. So, where are the little puppies? So I looked and I saw them. I just looked at them. They're all in a bush, all huddled together. I went and looked at them, and immediately one looked out, boom, boom, boom. So he must have been born just a few hours. But immediately he's completely in dog consciousness, totally overwhelmed by the present body that he's got, by his dog identity, and he barks. He or she, as we say nowadays, start barking because he's completely overcome by those modes of nature. Only in the human form of life is there a possibility to understand all these things and become free from the influence of the modes of nature. But it is not easy. It is not easy to become free from the influence of the modes of nature. As any honest spiritual practitioner will attest to, that it's a lot easier to talk about becoming free from Maya than to actually become free from Maya. But we have to begin at least by talking about it, because if we don't even know we're in prison, then how are we going to get out to a better life? If the prisoners think, oh, it's such a wonderful prison. See, they bring us food every day, and it's so nice. They don't have any knowledge of anything else. Actually, I was recently in a prison in America, only just about a month ago. And I spoke to some of the guards there, and one thing they told me was that, actually, the prisoners, in many ways, they have a better life than the people outside. Many people outside, they have to struggle to get food. They get food brought to them three times a day. And he said they don't grow old. You see someone 10 years in the prison and someone 10 years outside the prison, they don't age in the same way, probably because they have... And then we were discussing, why is that? And they said, well, they don't have stress. We have so much stress in outside life, so much pressure in whatever job you're in, stress to maintain a family. And they... than I offered, which the average American probably wouldn't understand. They have a very regulated lifestyle. They have enough time for resting. Most Americans don't sleep enough because of their hectic life. Even if they have enough time to sleep, they won't. They'll stay up late playing video games or whatever. So a person in the prison might think that, well, it's a very nice life. And actually some people, when they're released from prison, they immediately do some crime so they can get back. They'll throw a rock through a shop window and stand there waiting to be arrested. Because they can't cope with life outside, and then all of a sudden you have to look after yourself again. So someone in the prison might think, well, it's okay, I've got all my friends in here, and play table tennis, and they look after us. So we might think it's all right, but actually it's not a normal, natural, healthy condition. Of course, it's only an analogy, because when you get out of the prison, you're in the miserable material world. But if we take the miserable material world as a prison, our real natural happy life is in the spiritual world with Krishna. But we take various roles impelled by the modes of material nature. It's very difficult to overcome the nature that one has acquired from previous births. Nigraha king karishyati, Krishna says. If we just trying to control ourselves and control our nature. If you just think, well, okay, now I'm in Maya, so just I'll control all these thoughts and control my mind and senses. It's very difficult to do. I'm not sure about nowadays, but when I joined, there were many cases, including myself, of neophyte devotees who thought, well, okay, now I'm just going to be Krishna conscious. That's it. I'm going to minimize all sleeping and eating and just do more chanting and more service. So for a few days you're just sleeping 3 or 4 hours, no more, and thinking that's too much, chanting lots of rounds, doing lots of service, eating practically nothing. And then inevitably after 3 or 4 days, or some could hold on longer, of intense Krishna consciousness, they eat far more at one sitting than they would if they'd just eaten normally over the last 3 or 4 days, and then collapse for 24 hours sleeping like that. So artificially we cannot simply, even if we know what is the desired situation, it's very difficult to change, just go like that. Just to overcome one's conditioning. It's very strong. Devotees say to me, well, why don't you tell your disciple to, you know, and they shouldn't do that. You tell them as if there'd be no need for a guru, as if you just had to tell the disciple once, okay, now you just be a pure devotee. Okay. It's not so easy. And don't think of Maya anymore, don't do anything wrong, do everything perfectly. Yes, Guruji, finished. But it's not so easy. It's not so easy. The power of conditioning is very strong. There's some seminar with some of our devotees, I think from Pune and Chopati, or maybe they have some book called The Power of Habits. And I guess the idea is that they're trying to inculcate in people that if you develop certain habits, then that becomes part of you. It becomes habitual. So if you make the habit of rising early, then you get more time in your life instead of sleeping late. If you make the habit of when you wake up, you get up instead of just lying in a half asleep, half awake state, wishing that it was the evening when you were going to sleep instead of the morning when you have to get up. So habits. You make a habit of thanking people for everything they do, which isn't actually in Indian culture, but in Western culture, at least in English, Anglosphere culture. That's considered something very important. Thank you, everything you do. Thank you. So habits. The idea that if you do something repeatedly, then you can overcome the bad habits. So that the attempt is there by some kind of sadhana. Sadhana is a habitual practice, changing our habits. There's the external performance and the internal performance, which internal performance, when we're talking about sadhana, Gaurya Vaishnava, sadhana, that often refers to meditation on the siddha deha, the perfect body. But here I'm talking about how we rise early in the morning, we attend Mangalarti, we chant. That engages the body, engages the mouth in chanting, but it doesn't necessarily engage the mind. The mind can be somewhere completely different. It's completely somewhere else altogether. But the idea is that to bring the mind, atmanyeva vashangnayet, bring the mind under one's under the control of the self. To make the sankalpa, the determination, the vow to follow spiritual practices is a very good start. But to actually bring the mind completely in line with, we're not just chanting, but we're actually, it's coming not actually even from the soul, not even from the mind. Now, praying to Krishna. O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. And that takes us to the spiritual platform, which takes us to Krishna beyond the modes of material nature. Mangcha yoga vicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. When one engages in undeviated devotional service to Krishna, one transcends the modes of material nature and comes to the spiritual platform. So that verse is really the summation of the whole 13th and 14th chapters. After a complete analysis of the whole situation, here's the solution. Due to association with human, with various modes of nature, we get better or worse births. If we associate with sattva gun, urdvanga chanti sattvasta madhye tishtanti rajasaha jaganya guna vritisto adhoga chanti tamasaha. If we associate with the sattva guna, the mode of goodness, we go up. That means we may go up to the heavenly planets, we may go up to the sphere beyond the heavenly planets, the planets of the rishis. If we act in Rajaguna, we remain in the middle platform. And if we're associated with, or if we're stuck in the Tamaguna, then we have to go down to the hellish worlds or to lower species of life. So it's all due to our association with the modes of nature. Therefore, we should try to associate with the mode of goodness, or beyond that, the mode of goodness in pure devotional service to Krishna. But the mode of goodness is preferred over the others for personal spiritual elevation. Foods, sattvic foods are described in Bhagavad Gita. We should try to take foods that that they nourish the body, they make the mind, they help to make the mind steady for self-realization. It's very helpful for self-realization to make the mind steady. Of course, one's mind can also be steady in tamaguna, but that means to be dull like a rock, not alert, steady and alert, as in sattva guna. So So much information is packed into this verse. Still there's more. For instance, in this particular verse, it's not stated that this getting body after body after body is simply miserable. And in fact, if we take this verse out of context, we might think that actually this material world, there is something good to be had in it. Because if you get, here it's stated, sada sadyo nijanmasu, one is born in good or bad wombs, literally wombs. So you may think, okay, well it's good if I get born in a rich family, that'll be very good. But that is also an illusion, to think that there can be any happiness in this world. That is explained, of course, elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita. So this verse is to be taken in conjunction with all the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. And another important point is there's no information here. I'm not saying it's a lacking, it's just that you can't put everything, or Krishna is not putting everything in this one verse. What is not stated here is that it's miserable and we should try to get out, and we can get out. And that is stated at the end of these two chapters, the 13th and 14th chapters. The 14th chapter naturally follows on from the 13th in discussing the effects of the modes of nature. How this 13th chapter describes how the person, the living entity, is entrapped in the three modes of material nature. The 14th chapter describes the various effects of those three modes of nature. Of course, Krishna describes that elsewhere in Bhagavad Gita also, in the 17th chapters, 18th chapters, there are various factors which can be by which we can recognize the effects of the modes of material nature. But at the end of the 14th chapter, the whole summation is given of one who takes to full Krishna consciousness. He transcends the modes of nature. Now, to understand this further still, then we have to go to the Bhagavatam, where it's discussed how one can perform devotional service within the modes of, or strongly influenced by the modes of nature. Krishna says, Mangchiyo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kalpate. One who performs unflinching, undeviated devotional service to me, who serves me in bhakti yoga in this way, such a person goes fully beyond the modes of nature and attains to the spiritual situation. So Lord Kapiladev describes that one can perform devotional service worshipping Krishna, but strongly influenced by the lowest mode of material nature, but that hates others, considers himself the best. And we actually see that in among devotees, that although particularly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presentation of Krishna consciousness emphasizes the essence which is pure love of Krishna. Other sampradayas don't emphasize that to the same extent. For instance, here, Ramanuja is most prominent. He emphasizes Sharanagati, prapatti, surrendering to, taking shelter of the Lord. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he emphasized prema, pure love of Krishna. Surrendering to the Lord, that, of course, we're definitely not opposed to that principle, but that is the means, it's not the end in and of itself. The end is pure love of Krishna. And of course, the two are inseparable. Where there is prapatti or surrender, there must be love. Well, but there are degrees of that also, because if one surrenders out of fear, or out of fear of material existence, or if one surrenders out of a sense of awe and reverence, then the love is not as complete as that in which one approaches Krishna only because you love him. Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught us that about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Atantra Durlabha Prema Karibare Dan Shikhai Sharanagati Bhakatera Pran. For the sake of teaching how to attain that very extremely rare level of pure love of Krishna, for giving that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught the process of Sharanagati, taking shelter, surrendering, as Srila Prabhupada calls, surrendering to Krishna. This process, which is the very life of the devotees. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is prema pumartho mahan, the topmost prema prayojana, the necessity and the topmost attainment of human life is pure love of Krishna. But, coming back to that point of tamaguna, we do find it's very strange. We find devotees who seem to have a strong sense of almost hatred and condemning others in the most strong terms, even other devotees. So this is in the influence of tamaguna. They seems they have no love in their heart. They may be doing all the processes of bhakti, but there's no love in their heart. They seem to be more motivated by hating others than loving others and wanting to show themselves to be the best. You know, how can such nastiness be there? It's the effect of the modes of nature, or rajaguna, trying to make oneself. In rajaguna, people are very competitive and they want to enjoy, well, some aspects of rajaguna, control and enjoy. They may extend that to a group, that our group will be the best, we'll be the topmost, we'll show them, we'll build a bigger temple, we'll make more devotees, we'll distribute more books, we'll promote our guru as being the best, better than all the others, and in this way we'll promote our group. This is all influenced by the mode of passion. Or the influence of the mode of goodness. Generally, a devotee is recommended to try to cultivate the mode of goodness because it's conducive for self-realization. But it is also one of the three modes of material nature which covers the living entity in this material world. So if one gets into a mode of goodness situation, that one is very comfortable in one's devotional life, it may be very austere even, but very regulated. How can you be comfortable and austere at the same time? Well, one can be mentally comfortable. That, okay, I do all these austerities, and I follow a routine, and it's like this, and there's no real challenge to serve the Lord. They're not taking anxiety. I say, well, anxiety is the mode of passion, but anxiety for Krishna is the means to attain Krishna. if we're anxious to attain, that's actually stated in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu that tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitam atihi kriyatam yadi katopi labhyate. Tesham lolyam api mulyam ekalam tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam janma koti sukritayana labhyate. Krishna consciousness of Krishna, loving devotional consciousness of Krishna. If one finds out that it's available, one should purchase it. It's metaphorical language. Purchase it by any means. What is the means? What is the price? Lolyam intense greed, not by any amount of pious activities, even in millions of lifetimes. So that intense greed, anxiety, I must have it, I must have it, I must attain to Krishna prema. So that appears to be something in the lower modes of nature. If someone is very so keen to get something that they lose all their sense, they become obsessed, as in a love affair between a boy and a girl, they become obsessed and they lose all good sense. They may, when the parents say, no, you can't get married, then they both enter into, or they both take poison and die, they lose all good sense about what they should do. So this intense desire to attain Krishna might seem to be in the lower modes of nature, but that is completely pure, if it's completely pure. Whoops, well, that sounds like a redundant statement. But if it's the real thing, if it's the real thing, it's pure. Otherwise, it might be subtly, there might be some show of Krishna consciousness which seems like the real thing, but which isn't. It's materially motivated. There may be some desires for to be known as a great devotee, name and fame, so it's all very subtle. But real devotional service beyond the modes of material nature that takes us beyond birth and death, because it's the association with the modes of nature that binds us in this world of birth and death. Pure Krishna consciousness is beyond the modes of material nature. That's also described by Lord Kapila Dev, that when one is spontaneously attracted to glorifying Krishna's name, fame, forms, qualities, that is pure devotional service, beyond the modes of material nature. That is a prominent symptom. There are other symptoms also. So it's a great science of God consciousness, and realistic, practically speaking, no one knows this except the devotees of Krishna. Even there are many students of Bhagavad Gita who study this all very well, but because they don't recognize Krishna, then their understanding of all this is completely mixed up. If they take the Purusha to be, as the Mayavadis do, some strains of Mayavadis, they take that the Purusha means that we actually are Purusha. We actually are God, but we forgot it because we're in material nature. So they have the information from Bhagavad Gita, but they have the wrong understanding, the wrong interpretation. So it's very important to understand this properly. As Srila Prabhupada writes, this verse is very important for an understanding of how the living entities transmigrate from one body to another. Yeah, in this verse, there's more than in so much speculation, so much information that should be properly, clearly understood and applied in our lives. Is there any question, please? Yeah. Oh, there's another important point I wanted to make, which just came in my mind. I didn't write notes. Actually, I did write notes, but something completely different. And then on the notes I had to speak about, I didn't speak anything about that. There are so many philosophies in the world, and in the Western world, there's what's called Western philosophy. But it's really a very complex, it's difficult to say even amalgam, but a complex body of various thoughts and speculations. And even one philosopher's philosophy may change within his life. It's all very complex. One of the important subjects in Western philosophy, and actually in any philosophy, although we may not use the same terms in every language, in English language, is discussion of subjective reality and objective reality. In other words, subjective reality is what each individual perceives to be real. Someone who wears rose-colored glasses, if he forgets he's wearing rose-colored glasses, will see everything with a reddish color. So for him, and he forgets that he's wearing red glasses, for him that becomes reality. And some people question that, is there any objective reality whatsoever? Because it's just, reality is just as the observer observes it. However, that there is reincarnation is objective reality. Whether you believe in it or not, it happens. Death is objective reality. You believe in it or not. I'm completely convinced that I'll never die. You can be. But still, and even if even when we speak of the individual experiences, but then what do you mean by the individual? So the understanding that there is reincarnation is actually should be the first step before you get into all these complex discussions of subjective reality and objective reality. First of all, understand that even if we don't understand who we are, it's a fact that we transmigrate from one body to another, which is an overwhelming fact which has been missed by Western philosophy altogether, which should change a lot if they just accept that. So we see that Srila Prabhupada, his main thrust of preaching in the Western world was to tell people, you're not the body, you're eternal. Understand that, and then everything, our whole life, that should change based on the understanding that everything I do now affects my future. Yeah, what is your question? I'm just trying to get across here that we have this knowledge is so important, and then we're just discussing among a few people here. We're discussing, you should all be benefited by this, I hope. But this knowledge is so vital, we need to understand it clearly, to communicate it to others. It's not just building a temple, people will see, they'll say how nice, and they like the kirtan, but there should be some understanding also, clear understanding. What Srila Prabhupada did, how Srila Prabhupada spent most of his time was speaking this philosophy. If you take all the things that Srila Prabhupada did in 24 hours, the majority of the time was speaking this philosophy, either to a big crowd of people, to one or two disciples, to a press reporter, or to the dictaphone. He was very concerned to communicate this. Yeah.
What he said seems to be true, like the things are done in the real proper conscience for the real understanding. We are doing this for advancement of Krishna consciousness. We are able to understand. We spiritually get advanced and we are able to get the happiness also. But most of the time it seems in the moment we are doing many things, as you said, everybody is rushing and
everyone is?
Everybody is doing something.
We're supposed to be doing things only for the pleasure of Krishna. But a lot of the time we just do it without even thinking much about it. That means just like one sheep follows all the other sheep. Gada leka. What is that? Gada leka la nyai. One sheep follows the other. Therefore, there's so much stress on consciousness. The English title that Srila Prabhupada has given to this chapter is Nature, the Enjoyer, and consciousness. It's all about consciousness. As Srila Krishna consciousness. As Srila Prabhupada often explained, that Arjuna was prepared to fight. Then he didn't want to fight. Then again he went to fight. So what was the difference? It was the same Arjuna, but his consciousness had changed. The reason, eventually, after hearing Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna fought, but his consciousness was different. His motivation for doing so was different. His understanding of why he was doing what he was doing was different than to when he first came to the battlefield. And it was different to when he had his almost nervous breakdown, when he refused to fight. His consciousness changed. His understanding changed. His motive changed. His whole worldview changed. I recently gave a lecture talking about full consciousness, which is a term that Srila Prabhupada often uses. Those who are in full consciousness of me, Krishna says. Ananyas chintayantoma, use this term, full consciousness. In the second canto, Jiva Bahubi. What is the use of a long life without understanding anything? Better a moment of full consciousness. Full consciousness. Clear consciousness. Just like sometimes when we have this, we're just struck with a thought and it's like a lightning bolt. Ah! Everything becomes clear, just like in the darkness of night, then there's lightning, and for a second, you see everything bright and clear. So full consciousness, we're just going on with our devotional lives, and day to day may seem like routine, we do the same thing, be struck. Yes, I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure. This is to satisfy Srila Prabhupada. I'm so fortunate, I have the opportunity to serve Krishna. And everything becomes clear. I'm not this body. I have nothing to do with this world. I'm just here to serve Krishna. Everything becomes clear. Full consciousness. So, Krishna consciousness is meant to bring us to that consciousness all the time. Intense consciousness. The mode of goodness means peaceful, comfortable, but not, even in Krishna consciousness, may not be fully intense. So, Srila Prabhupada, he would often give his disciples lots of hard work, difficult things to do, just to press them more and more, surrender, surrender, surrender. So all you can do is call out to Krishna, help me, help me, help me. Comfortable life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. Aram is haram. Yes. Aram means comfort and haram means abominable. So these discussions on Shastra, the classes, they're not meant to be for entertainment or make us feel good. They may do, but the real thing is to wake us up to our real consciousness. People thought, well, Prabhupada was very heavy. He said things which really shook people. But that that's what sadhu is supposed to do, to shake you up. Shake you up and cut our material attachment. Now, I always forget this word. Satsu sajeta buddhiman. Tato dusanga utsurja. Satsu sajeta buddhiman. Santa evasya chindanti manovya sangam uktibihi. Having at least theoretically understood that this whole world is completely useless, there's no happiness anywhere in it. First thing, that's the first thing we have to understand, because we're trying to be happy in this world. First thing to understand, we're nothing to do with this world. It's just a place of suffering. Having understood this, we should be intelligent enough to take the next step, which is to associate with devotees. And what will the devotees do? We think, well, we associate with devotees, nice people. But this verse says that the devotee, then they speak in a not nice way. They cut our material attachments by their words. Not nice. If you find a sadhu who's nice, be careful. Run away. He's just trying. Just like you'll find so many sadhus, they'll give blessings or they'll give seminars on how you can, personality development, that means how you can adjust to the world and live better in it. Cheating, absolutely cheating. The only business of a sadhu for the neophyte, first thing, somehow or other, get it in his consciousness. We're not part of this world. We should not try to enjoy it. That's the first thing the sadhu must do. I just got an email from a godbrother of mine who's a grihastha of sorts. So he said, there's one story I heard from Prabhupada. But I never say this in when grihasthas are there. It's just too, I guess he was thinking it's too heavy. Srila Prabhupada told about Sridhar Swami, the original commentator on this planet in this Kali Yuga, on Srimad Bhagavatam. He wanted to take sannyas, but he had a young wife who was pregnant, and he thought, how can I take sannyas? Then she gave birth to the child, but she died while giving birth. It used to be quite common until quite recently that the woman will die when she's giving birth. So he thought, now I'm stuck. I don't have a wife, so I could take sannyas, but I have a baby. So who will look after the baby? Just then he saw one lizard gave birth to a baby lizard. And immediately the baby lizard saw some insect going past and swallowed it. Then Sridhar Swami thought, by the arrangement of nature, Krishna arranges for every living being's food. He left the child and took sannyas. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.